Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com.
Precision Hydration offer electrolyte drinks in different strengths to match how you sweat. Personalise your hydration strategy today at precisionhydration.com and get a free box or tube of pH worth up to $9.99 using the code OXYGENADDICT.
And we're also brought to you by our patrons,
who support the show with a monthly donation, and you can get our 2018 Patrons Only podcast as a thank you.
You sure can. And if you want to find out more about becoming a patron, just click a link in the show notes or click a link on the webpage that's got this embedded. And headlining that 2018 Patrons Only podcast is Lucy Charles, who we're going to talk about a little bit later on today, aren't we?
We are. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about Lucy, and we've got loads of other cool stuff coming up.
We have. So first up, last week was a bit of an odd one. I was away, so we just had a pre-recorded interview. So we had no chat, so we're aware that we missed out on a few of the races that happened then. There's some big names racing each other, so we want to go back over and cover those. And then it's back to back with big weekends, because there's loads of big stuff happening this weekend with WTS Leeds was happening. We had Ironman Cairns, which was very interesting for... Well, one very notable reason, wasn't it, really, Hells?
Yeah, Javier Gomez was making his Ironman debut.
His long-awaited Ironman debut. So we've got all kinds of exciting stuff to cover. And this week's interviews of the week, we have got the one and only Nikki Bartlett back on the show with an update from her race at Lanzarote. Now, that was recorded before her stonking performance at 70.3 Staffordshire this weekend. And we've also got a great interview with Ironman Texas winner Matt Hansen, who, of course, broke the official Ironman world record there and went 2:34 in the marathon, which is pretty toasty by anyone's stretch of the imagination, isn't it? Sub 6 minute miling off the bike. Thank you very much. So great interview with him. Super intelligent guy, actually, Hells. PhD nonetheless. So he's got some great insights into his training as well.
Oh, PhD in, do you know what it was?
Yeah, in exercise science. So he walks the talk and stuff. So he's got all kinds of stuff going on. I think I'm right saying it's exercise science. It was a couple of weeks ago. I interviewed. You know how you do? You interview somebody and then it's like, is that right? Have I imagined that? I'm almost certain that's right.
I absolutely. Yes, he does.
Well, he talks in the interview about, I can't remember which race it was, but after winning one of his races, basically driving 17 hours through the night to get back, washing in the room at the back of his thing and walking out to do a lecture at the university he was working at. So, you know, the life and times of a pro triathlete might not be exactly what people expect it to be.
Wow. Yeah, he says that he's sort of serves on like endurance research board, on the first endurance research board, and he's done research on recovery with like loads of companies and stuff like that. So yeah,
so I did get it right. Phew.
Yeah, he did. He's written a lot of articles on his website, which is matthansontri.com. So you can go and check it out in the research section.
Good stuff. All right, so listen, let's leap right in, Hells. We've got loads to get through. Our results this week are sponsored by precisionhydration.com. So first thing to shout out about them is there's going to be a hydration workshop running at the Specialized Concept Store in Harrogate from 6:30 in the evening on Tuesday the 19th of June. So that's next week as we're recording. There's going to be a talk from Andy Blow, one of the founders of the company and fantastic athlete himself, on the science of hydration, followed by a Q&A session. You can get your sweat tested in person before or after the talk at a discounted rate. And as an extra sweetener, you can get a free Precision Hydration drinks bottle if you mention that the Oxygen Addict Triathlon podcast sent you along. So you can email James at hello@precisionhydration.com to RSVP and book your place. Find out more about that. It's completely free. If you have your sweat tested, there'll be a charge for that, but it's well worth doing if you suspect you're a heavy sweater, like my dad, who only has to look at the sun and completely drenched in sweat from head to toe, or like me, if you finish a run in the heat and your black t-shirt and shorts are completely caked in white salt, even though I'm not a particularly sweaty person. Those two signs are a symbol that something's going on with your sweat that is going to massively impair your performance come race day. And it's a super easy fix. It's a painless sort of sweat test where you sit down and they stick this little thingamajig on your arm, and in no time at all they can tell you whether you're a heavy sweater or a light sweater and what the concentration of sodium and other electrolytes are in your sweat. So if you're in the north of England and you can get over to that, that's a total no-brainer. And remember, you can get a free box or tube of pH worth up to $9.99 using the code OxygenAddict on their website. The other thing to mention, of course, is if you attend their talks, they very often have great big bundles of goodies at a discounted rate as well. So watch out for those on the night. So where should we start off, Hel? Shall we start down in Cairns? That's pretty hot and sweaty, isn't it? That's on topic.
Yeah, let's start there and then we'll go to Staffs.
We'll do that. So the big expectation here was Javier Gomez stepping up to race his first full iron distance race. And if you were to ask me beforehand, if a guy like Gomez goes and runs a 2:41 marathon on his debut, would he win? I'd have gone, no question. He's dominated. But turns out someone else had other ideas, didn't they?
Yeah, Braden Curry of New Zealand. He made his Ironman debut in New Zealand, didn't he? Winning that one. And yeah, backed it up in Cairns, Rob.
Stunning performance by him. Apparently the guys ran shoulder to shoulder till, I don't know, the 35-kilometre mark, I think, something like that. Maybe even further than that. 7K to go, Curry made his surge. And, yeah, running 2:40 paces is pretty full-on for an experienced Ironman. And I know Gomez is an experienced and fast triathlete, and you can say all you like about 2:40 pace not seeming that fast in training, but I wonder what was going through his head running his first Ironman marathon shoulder to shoulder with someone at just a shade over 6 minute mile pace. It's a solid debut from him, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And there was so much expectation on him, Rob, going into this race, wasn't there, that it would almost be, oh yeah, it's just going to be a breeze, really.
Well, I think it was a stacked field. Obviously, Braden Curry's got form. You also had Terenzo Bazzone, who's been the man in form over the past sort of 3 or 4 months. He was there with him off the bike, and Tim O'Donnell was there as well. So big pack of guys running shoulder to shoulder off the bike. Scorching fast, it's got to be said as well. 7:54 for the win for Braden Curry. Gomez went 7:56. Terenzo went, he's gutted about this for the guy, 8 hours and 7 seconds.
Yeah. And his transitions were really quick, Rob. He had the quickest transitions of the lot. You'd expect Gomez from his ITU, wouldn't you, to be absolutely super duper quick.
Yeah.
And from the top five, he was actually taking his time in T2. He was 1.5 minutes, whereas Terenzo, 55 seconds.
He's in and out like a flash.
Yeah.
And again, Terenzo has run a solid 2:46 flat marathon there and been beaten into third place. So fast racing. The standard gets higher and higher, doesn't it? And it does go to show that this idea of having you know, big races where they get the big athletes together is really working.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, that would have been really cool, wouldn't it, to be watching that unfold out there in Cairns. Absolutely. And Rob, the other reason that there was a lot of tension on Ironman Cairns was that Marinda Carvery was going to be back over the Ironman distance following the birth of their daughter Isabel with Tim O'Donnell. And obviously, having won at Kona, she just needs to finish an Ironman race, doesn't she, to secure her spot in October.
But so she's in now. But I tell you what a way to come back, though, after 8 months, is it? Having 8 months after having had a child?
Yeah, I mean, she has already raced, but not over the Ironman distance, hasn't she? But yeah, a great performance from her. But even more impressive performance, Rob, from Teresa Adam of New Zealand, who got the win in 8 hours 53. Now, Rob, I was just doing a little bit of reading about Teresa Adam. It was her second only ever Ironman. She used to do a lot of triathlon. She used to do water polo as well. But basically, she had a lot of injuries, and she only went into longer distance triathlon for fun. So I think she even surprised herself with the win. And she's like, I couldn't believe I've won it. I just can't believe it. I've had so many injuries for so many years that I only started longer distance stuff for fun. To win this is quite weird.
But imagine being in that position, having won your first Ironman that you entered for fun, and then coming up against Rinny in your second Ironman and beating her. Like, I know she's I know she's coming back from having a child and all, but you've got to have a certain amount of stars in your eyes, surely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She, I mean, so she's second in Taupo at Ironman New Zealand, obviously home Ironman. And then, yeah, I mean, she's got to be... Yeah,
oh,
fantastic.
She was second at Taupo. Sorry, yeah, my mistake. I thought she'd won on her debut. No, you're right. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, seriously though, but come second.
Hats off.
Second on your debut. Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be a great story. We'll have to hunt her down and get her interviewed. Love to hear that story. Any Kiwi listeners who've got the inside track, or Australian listeners even, give us a shout if you can put us in contact. That'd be great.
That'd be cracking.
All right, so second race to talk about then. We've had some scorcho hot weather over here in the UK. It must be the best May on record, mustn't it? It's got to be.
I can't even believe it.
It's like
just
the summer
every
of
76. Day so far, it's just ding.
Yeah.
Blue skies. It's amazing because we just don't often get this. So when it does finally turn and it starts to rain, you know, every single day, we'll all be a little bit gutted, won't we?
I don't think we can complain, can we, after having had this run of weather. I think there's a few people complaining though who actually raced Staffordshire, because it was baking hot on the run by all accounts there. There's loads of stories coming out of Staffordshire of people keeling over and passing out on the run and all kinds of stuff. So yeah, hot day to be racing for the age groupers. And I think there was with a mist on the lake that delayed the start, there was all kinds of shenanigans going on, right?
Yeah, that's right. So fog delayed the swim start, Rob, and people have said it was just like pea soup. and everyone was in their wetsuits, and there were photos of like Emma Pallant relaxing with sort of socks and gloves on, and yeah, just this photo of Chase Water, which with two little ducks on it, minding their business. But it looked like, you know, I don't know, a scene from autumn or midwinter or something like that. But yeah, eventually that fog cleared and then they could get underway with the race.
Yeah, good. Right, so on the ladies' side, pretty impressive domination by Emma Pallant there, taking it out in 4:16 with a scorching run. I think she did 1:17 from memory.
That's right.
It was pretty much, it was well up there with the lead male pros times, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that was an absolutely cracking run from Emma Pallant to take the win. And then Rob, Nikki Bartlett came in second in 4:25. And I think I'm right in saying she got a new bike course record there.
Oh, so wow, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah, smashed it on the bike. And then Fenella Langridge, another podium for her. And we have interviewed her, so that will be coming out over the next couple of weeks. Really, really good fun and really interesting to hear her story as well. So she was third in 4:29. And then we should mention as well, Rob, Lucy Gossage was fifth, 4:33. Susie Richards, sixth, which is great, in 4:42.
Yeah, cool stuff. Now, over on the men's side, win was taken out by Elliot Smales. Second place was George Goodwin. Third was Brian McChrystal. And it looks like it was pretty hot racing on the men's side as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think Brian McChrystal and Elliot Smales were in very close contention coming off the bike, I think.
Yeah, Brian rode through I think he set a new bike course record of 2:09, which is super fast on that course. Zoomed through the field to come out of T2 in second. So hats off to him for that. Yeah, sounds like it's good racing all over down in Staffordshire. And I've seen loads of stuff on social media about people saying, you know, this was a great event. It was really, really good. And people enjoyed the run through the town centre that's been moved there this year. And the photos that have come out look like it's super well supported in the town centre. So great stuff. Hats off to the 70.3 Staffordshire organisers. Sounds like they've done a great job.
I think so. Then, Rob, there are some races that we didn't mention, as you said, last week. But before we do that, there were some others. Impressive. Daniela Ryf winning 70.3 Switzerland, seventh overall, Rob.
Yeah, seventh overall and like in amongst the male pros, obviously, but only 11 minutes down on the men's pro winner. And so we often chuck around that theory of 30 minutes down is a good performance on the men's winner. So to be 11 minutes down, I saw some tweet from her coach saying she's still not letting up on the men. She's still crushing them. I think where did I see earlier on that Her swim was only 2 minutes down on Josh Amberger's swim. And obviously he was way off the front in Kona, wasn't he?
Yes.
So her swim, like the insinuation being she's really worked on her swim because obviously Lucy Charles come along has made everybody raise the game. So if she's only 2 minutes down on Amberger over a half Ironman, it suggests 4 minutes down on Amberger over full Ironman, which is about what Lucy was, I think, from memory. So again, will that be a different race this year if you've got Reef and Lucy Charles coming out of the water next to each other and potentially riding away from everybody else?
It's going to be great, Rob.
You can't wait. There's loads more racing to go yet as well. We're only in sort of middle of June, aren't we?
I know. Back here in the UK, Rob, we had the World Triathlon Series at Leeds, which was won by Vicky Holland and Richard Murray.
Yeah, and I've got a great quote here that he gave to one of the media stations, the ITU media people. For all of you guys and girls who have bad days on the swim, this is Richard Murray talking. During the swim today, I actually thought I should retire from triathlon. I was way behind the pack in the swim. It was really tough. But during the bike, I started feeling better. And by the run, I felt pretty good. So it just goes to show, right? Even Richard Murray has the same thought. This is a stupid sport. If someone gives me 50 quid for my bike, they can have it. And I'm going to go and take up golf. Who's not been there?
He likes golf as well, Rob.
Really?
Yeah, he told us that in the podcast. So if you haven't listened to, go on.
As my dad always said, I'll take up golf when I'm old. He says that every year. He's 76 this year. When I'm old, I can't ride a bike anymore.
Golf it is. If you haven't heard Richard Murray, go back a couple of episodes because we had him on and it was very, very funny. So go and listen to him and his girlfriend, Rachel Klammer, as well.
Cool stuff. Right. So where are we up to? Other races I thought we should mention. Something that I picked up from Lionel Sanders' blog. He obviously himself had an amazing race. If people haven't seen the video that Challenge put together of the highlights of the Challenge Championship, the sort of the half distance championship that they put on at Samarin, what an amazing race Sanders and Sebi Kienle had against each other. Sanders chasing him down and they've got video cameras right by them as they kind of, they're surging like runners do against each other to try and break each other and run. It's just fantastic. And Sebi gives it a dig and then Sanders stays with him and then Sanders goes again and you can kind of just see Sebi's head drop just very slightly. It's brilliant racing. So Sanders takes Sebi down and Lucy Charles beats Anne Haug at that race. So second win there for Lucy Charles as well. It looked like a really good race and a really well-made video as well.
Yeah, and Reese, her boyfriend, and who does coaching as well, doesn't he? And Reese said afterwards that that was her best performance so far.
Yeah, she's dominated. Getting stronger with every race, isn't she?
Yeah. It's great to watch her.
I wonder whether she'll come up against Daniela Reef before Kona.
Don't know, because Reese's not doing Roth, is she?
In a tactical way, maybe even over 70.3. The reason I'm asking is, the thing that I picked up from Lionel Sanders' blog was he said he thinks Jan Frodeno is going around the world deliberately picking on people and racing them head to head that he didn't get to race at Kona last year. He said he came after me at Oceanside. And in his video afterwards, you can sort of see he's saying, how do you beat this guy? He's like the ultimate triathlete. He's got no weaknesses. If he's in form, how do we beat him? He took me down Oceanside. He's gone after Patrick Langer at 70.3 Krakow and just dominated there. He's put the fastest swim, bike and run together. So it looks like he's just out to own people mentally before Kona even comes around.
Which is a very clever tactic, isn't it?
It's exactly what Mackie used to do back in the day. He's one of the only athletes who ever used to really talk about his tactics. And he would find out whoever'd... I remember him chasing Faris Al-Sultan around the world and just basically making his life a misery and going and racing him and make sure he was fit and taking him down in these small races and just going, wherever you are, mate, I'm going to race you and I'm going to beat you. And by the time Kona comes around, I'm going to own you. And it's that kind of attitude that we haven't seen outside of boxing, really. I don't think it made him very popular with people. To this day, I don't think it made him popular. But he would say he doesn't care about that because he ended up with two Ironman World Championships. And he always considered that he, like all that in-your-face stuff, was part of his race tactics.
Yeah, and the mental side of it, as people say, is so important, and a bit that, as age groupers, we don't even think about it too
Yeah,
much, do we? How can you
totally.
have time to do all of that when you've got everything else going on in your life? But
Maybe Lucy's got to go and chase Daniela Ryf down and take it to her in some races before Kona.
yeah, maybe.
Let's see, hey. All right, was that all the stuff we had to talk about? I think it was, wasn't it?
I think so. There's one thing that I want to mention, Rob, which is Diva Triathlon, and we're about to hear shortly from Diva, but if I just tell you, the winners were Michelle Wilcox of Mansfield Triathlon Club and Donald Brooks from Tamebridge Triers. So they were the winners over the Olympic distance, and it was a qualifier, Rob, for the Worlds. I did it because I was able to. It's actually raced through my childhood. So here we go. Here was a few interviews that I did after the Diva Triathlon.
We have just finished Chester Diva Triathlon, and I've got a few people that I'm going to be talking to as well. First of all, if you want to introduce yourself.
Yep. I'm Joe Spraggins from Clap and Chasers in London, and I met Helen at Ironman Wales last year, and we've been friends ever since, eh?
Friends. Hi, I'm Ian Lydiot, chair of Cardiff Triathletes, and I met Helen last year, popping around for a gym session, one of our sessions.
Down in Cardiff,
down
correct.
In Cardiff.
My name's Rodney Savage, first time up here in Chester, and I've never met Helen before in my life. Yeah. Hello, how are you?
My name's Dave Mott, Cardiff Tri, my first time up in Chester. Just met Helen, she's just given me a lemon drizzle cake.
Oh yeah, there's a story behind the cake. That's because I said to Ian, when he was going to be coming up to Chester, after taking me to the gym in Cardiff, I said, I will give you cake. So yeah, there's a lemon drizzle cake for the trip back down south. So Joe, which one were you doing today and how did it go?
So I was doing the middle distance race today, really good. Third year in a row, I love it, so we come back every year. I actually was lucky enough to finish second overall, so really happy with the day. Yeah,
cracking job. What? There's another Clapham chaser taking a photo of you. Congratulations, that's awesome. Did you know that you were in second all the way through?
Well, my swim is pretty weak, so I knew I was going to have work to do on the bike, and I think I sort of counted people back on the run when I got off the run. I think I was at about fifth, so I knew I was in the mix and wanted to make my way through, and I had Katie here updating me sort of with her positions and trying to tell me where I was, but it's all a bit difficult with the Olympic distance going on as well, but kind of worked out in the end that I was pretty high up there, and yeah, ended up second, so really happy.
That is awesome. Well done. And where were you last year? Where did you come last year?
I came fifth last year, so slowly making the improvements. So yeah, I guess that just leaves one jump next year, maybe. Probably not though.
And you also have a red number on, so how did
no,
you
know?
No, oh, eight. Oh, orange. Okay, I can't tell. Right, fine. You all did the Olympic.
We did.
How did it go?
Went all right. It got very hot on the run, but a really good course. Swim went well for me. Good bike, decent run. Yeah, really good course. Really enjoyed.
Rodney, what did you think about it?
Excellent course. Really enjoyed it. Up and down on the bike, which made it interesting. The run was very good. A bit of cross-country chucked in for a good measure.
Yeah, the bit of grass, yeah.
Yeah, and towards the end, when it crossed the line, the guy said it came fifth in my age group, so happy with that.
Fantastic. And were you trying to qualify? Was that the aim?
Yes, yeah, that's the aim, yeah. So touch wood, and we'll find out later on.
That's brilliant. And so was that for Australia or for Lausanne next year?
That was
year?
For, yeah, Lausanne next year, yeah, in Switzerland, yeah. I'd love to go to Australia, but no. I'll do it with Switzerland, will do for next year.
Brilliant. Ian, how did you get on?
Enjoyed the course, fantastic event. It was so well organised. I mean, they got the middle distance and they got Olympic distance at the same time. And yeah, it was just amazing. Marshals are fantastic, as usual.
There were so many marshals out there, weren't there?
Absolutely brilliant. I don't know where all the marshals came from. I
mean, Chester Tri Club.
Chester Tri
Club. Kudos to Chester Tri Club.
It's huge. But yeah, fantastic. Yeah, so well done, organisers. They're fantastic. Thank you, Chester Tri Club.
And so would you recommend it as a whole as an event?
Absolutely, yeah. Brilliant. I'll definitely come back next year. Cracking event.
Yeah,
definitely.
Without shadow of a doubt.
The swim was good, enjoyable. The bike was undulating, so it made it interesting. So some lovely fast downhill bits were great. It feels so good when you pass people. It's lovely. It's lovely. It doesn't happen often, so I really enjoy it when it does.
And what did you make of swimming in the River Dee?
Murky. It's not cold, which is good. But you know, I'm fine actually. I mean, you know, I'll find out later on, obviously, if I should be all right, touch wood. No, it was actually really nice, you know, because you don't get that many river swims, so something to do a little bit different. And it's got to be all right, otherwise, hundreds of people wouldn't have swam in it.
It was all right, actually, yeah. I sort of,
you had to do further than us.
Yeah, it was a bit further, but I thought it was going to be colder than it was, and when I got in, I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was quite nice. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I've drunk 2 cans of Coke now, because they tell you that it'll kill all the bacteria, so I'm going to be fine in the morning. So, all good, yeah.
And what's next for you?
I'm doing Bolton, actually. Ironman UK, so hopefully see a lot of the guys from the podcast and maybe Rob, etc., out and about, and yeah, see how that goes. Going to give it a good go, yeah.
And guys, what's next for you?
I think we're all doing Cardiff qualifier in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, this is a standard qualifier for the standard. Cardiff's the qualifier for the sprint.
Yeah,
so draft legal. Yeah, so it'll be interesting. Yeah,
it's a little bit different. Yeah, so Cardiff tried for the draft legal event. Yeah.
And are you not roped into marshalling for that one?
No, it's not. It's not a club run event. So it's organised by
Always Aim High.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so they're organising that. But. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, have a great rest of the season, and thank you very much. Enjoy being in the Northwest.
We will indeed. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you very much. Thank you, guys.
So congratulations again to Joe and to the guys at Cardiff Tri, Ian and his pal. Thank you very much for stopping to chat. It was great fun. And we mentioned there, Rob, about swimming in the river, and it turns out the river might have been a little bit even more disgusting, but I was okay. I drank Coke and no illness afterwards, but you often hear of people being a little bit sick after swimming in the Dee, but you know, I
gotta get that can of Coke in.
Yeah,
the can of Coke kills all known germs dead. You might not want to drink it at any other time if that is actually the case. It does seem to do the job though, doesn't it, after an open water swim.
It was fine. And I had never swum in the Dee, Rob, but it really was fine.
Yeah, I loved it. I've swum in that a few times. It's a lovely place to swim. You just hope you don't. It's like anywhere, isn't it? You can get unlucky and pick something up in the water wherever you go.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So we're going to leap on over to Coach's Couch. This week, we thought we would talk a little bit about racing in the heat, didn't we, Hels?
Yeah, basically, we've had a lot of people saying that racing in the heat, I just didn't do as well as I was expecting. They're saying that, you know, my heart rate was really, really high. And I remember, Rob, racing in Peguera for Challenge Peguera back in 2014. And so many people didn't do as well as they had hoped because it was baking.
Yeah, totally. And obviously, we've said 70.3 Staffordshire in the UK this weekend was really hot. We have also had, I think, 70.3 Switzerland that we talked about. Daniela Reef went in, was again another baking hot day. And I had a couple of athletes race out there, and this has come up for them, basically. You know, I felt great in the swim. I felt great on the bike. I stuck to my power numbers and everything was going as it should do. And then on the run, the second half of it came round, and I just felt like I was wilting in the heat and my heart rate was sky high. And one of the things I wanted to get across to people is the thing that's going to happen in the heat, your heart rate is going to be much higher than it usually is for a given pace. And the reason for that is that your body's going to shunt some of the blood that would usually be sent to your muscles to exercise. Some of it's going to get sent to your skin to try and get rid of the heat. So it's almost as though your muscles haven't got as much blood there as they would usually have. The way around this that your body has is it makes your heart beat faster so it can get that blood to the muscles as well as getting the blood to the skin to shed the heat away as well. So on the one hand, you can look at it like this. Don't be concerned if you look down and you see a really high heart rate. The way to judge your perception when you're racing in the heat is to go off your breathing. If your breathing is about the same as you'd expect it to be for a given pace, and obviously it's a bit easier these days with most people having a GPS watch that tells them how fast they're actually running, that's a good guideline that you're running about the right kind of pace. Your heart rate is going to be higher because you're trying to shed this heat. What you can do to help your body out is you can try and stay cool as much as you can by trying to get your skin wet. So when you get to the aid station, pour some water over your tri-suit, pour it over your arms. If you get the chance to get some ice in your hat, and not many races do it, but if you do, it's a great way to get some ice or even down the back of your tri-suit. It'll help keep you cool and that'll help sort of regulate body temperature as much as anything. There is I kind of hesitate to say this, if you're not acclimated to the heat, and most of us in the UK are not, there's an inevitable slowing down is going to happen from how you would expect to race in your normal temperate conditions, just because your body isn't going to be used to doing it. So you are going to slow down a certain amount. Just accept that. It doesn't mean you've had a terrible day, but if you can slow yourself down a little bit at the start of the run and maybe say, I don't know, 10 or 15 seconds a case slower, and then you can push on and feel like you're pushing later on. What we're trying to avoid when we're racing is the feeling of having to slow down because we're absolutely whipped. So if you can back yourself off a little bit early doors, knowing that the heat's going to affect you, I think that's one of the only sensible things you can do. It isn't easy in the UK when we don't often get hot weather to acclimate to it, especially if you're going abroad and, you know, out of the traditional English springtime and you go and race in Lanzarote. You need to get there 7 to 10 days before to properly get your body used to even exercising in the heat. And I'm saying this having just come back from Greece. It was 35 degrees one day and I went for a run. And after 10 minutes, I just thought, you know what? This is pointless. I'm shuffling along like a granny. I'm just going to walk it back in. And that's all you can do, except that that's what your body is going to do until it acclimates. So if you get really unlucky on race day, that's kind of how it's going to be. And the best thing you can do to manage your pace is try and manage your body heat and try and keep yourself cool.
Rob, we're doing Bikram spin at the moment.
Really? Is it just ridiculously hot in your spin studio?
Yeah, it's rather warm, so it does feel, yeah, it's very, very hot, so it's a lot sweatier than normal. Yeah, in winter you sort of start off, don't you, in your hats and your gloves and stuff, and in summer you go in and all the windows are open straight away, and yeah, just dripping from the off. And we have been joking that it is like Bikram spin.
Well, one thing that's worth mentioning here, I know we plug our sponsors Precision Hydration, but we do it because they're a great company who provide a brilliant product that people really need. If you're racing in the heat, the thing to point out here is your body's way of getting rid of heat is it takes water to the skin, it leaves your bloodstream and it goes out through your skin, and that water that evaporates takes heat away from it. The important thing to understand about electrolyte loss is your body uses sodium to kind of help the water get across the skin membrane barrier. So it's like this, it's called coactive transport, and the sodium ion helps transport the water across that skin to get it outside. That's where all your sodium goes. If you're sweating a lot because it's hot, the sodium's going with it. So you have to replace it. If you don't do, you're either going to get crampy or you're going to feel pretty ill later on. Worst case scenario. So really get on the hydration on the hot days. If you've got those little salt tab things, I race with one of those blister packs stuffed up my tri-suit leg hills so I can take those on the run. And I get loads of it in my bike bottles as I'm racing. So anyone who sees me with weird lumpy thighs at Lakesman this coming weekend, Lakesman half, that's what's going on. It's not me having strange varicose veins.
Good. It's always good to explain these things.
Though I may have those as well.
Yeah, exactly. Rob, we'll hear from Nicky Bartlett shortly, but before we do that, why don't we hear from Matt Hansen?
Yeah, so winner of Ironman Texas. We got a great interview here with him about what it's like to run side by side with someone pushing you to a 2:34 marathon. And it's also worth saying that he broke the official Ironman world record during this race. So here we go, the official Ironman world record holder, Matt Hansen. All right, so we're really happy to welcome onto the show Matt Hansen after his recent pretty tremendous performance at Ironman Texas, man, it's got to be said. So thanks for joining us. How are you feeling? Have the legs recovered yet?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Yeah, I think they're finally coming around. I tried to do Chattanooga 70.3 last weekend, and everything was good on the swim and the bike, and I got to the run and I tried to open up the stride and my leg said, nope, you got nothing. So I think the first half of my run at Ironman Texas was half faster than the half that I put together at Chatty, but that's all right. Quintana Roo has their factory in Chattanooga. So it's always a good race for me to get to and get to spend a little bit of time with them there. And we did some fun promo videos and stuff to just talk a little bit about the new bike that they have, or the disc brake and everything that they've recently done. So that was a still a good trip. I ended up fourth, which is fine, but definitely wasn't the result we were looking for there. But yeah, Texas was still stinging a bit.
You can get through the swim and the bike, but you find out on the run whether you really have recovered or not, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's no hiding it there.
Hey, listen, let's talk this through. First up, you went 7:39.25 overall at Texas. Splits were 52:30, 4:07 on the bike, and then a 2:34.40 run, which is just mind-blowing. Now, I've spent some time reading your blog, and I've kind of got the backstory to what's going on already. So first up, hats off to you for being a good writer. It reads really well, man.
Thank you.
So we'll direct people over to your blog, which is, it's matthansontry.com, isn't it?
Yep, that's it. Yep.
So yeah, so that's a real good read, but let's get it out in verbal form. I want to hear all about the race, sure. Starting with the swim, and we'll go through the whole thing, because it sounds like it was an epic day of racing as well as a super fast time.
Yeah, it was definitely a tough day of racing out there from the get-go. I didn't execute the swim start very well. I was a little bit amped up after winning it in 2017 and just kind of wanting to really go and put together another good performance. And so I went out too hard. I was sitting like second or third at the 200 mark, and by the 400 mark, I got spit off the back. I'm not the guy that's going to be in. I'm trying to catch the front pack, and I'm holding on longer and longer. Last year, I think I was in the front pack until about the 2.5 to 3K mark, and then I got spit off the back. So to get spit off at about the 500 mark wasn't really what I was hoping for on the swim. I've worked really hard with on the swim with Julie, and I was swimming really well, like way better than I had in the pool before. And just, you know, it was just how it went. And, you know, it could have gone either way. I could have panicked and just shut down and ended up, you know, latching onto the second pack. But I just tried to put together a strong swim and picked off a few other guys that got spit off the front pack later on, and we were able to form a pack of two or three and kind of come out of the water about 3 minutes behind the first group, but about 3 minutes ahead of the second group, which is pretty much exactly the same situation that I was in last year, which shows that, you know, I could do that, you know, the same type of swim that I had last year, but most of it this year alone. So it means that my fitness is going in the right direction in the water, but my execution still needs a little bit of work.
every single person listening can relate to the idea, I'm sure, of going too hard and too excited for the first 400, and then your arms explode and you think, I'm literally swimming backwards at this point. So yeah. good on you for doing that for us in a pro race, man.
Yeah, I mean, Julie said, you know, it looked like a monkey jumped on everybody else's back at about the 400 mark, and you looked like a gorilla jumped on your back, maybe two. Like, you just stopped. So she was there. She got to see it firsthand. And so she, you know, it was good for her to and I to be able to chat about that afterwards. So definitely making some adjustments going into future races again.
So Julie, we should mention, is Julie Dibbins, one of your yes. coaches, right?
Yep. Julie. I've been working with Julie now for, I think it'll be 2 years in a couple weeks. So, yeah, it's been good. She gets the way I think and the way I operate. And so it's been really good.
Good stuff. Right. So onto the bike then. This is the point where
yeah.
I suppose you're super excited and you're ready to go and you know the gap's 3.5 minutes. So I read in your blog that you were holding kind of half Ironman power for the first half an hour or so to ride the boys down.
Yeah. I ended up holding, getting out the first 10, 15 K are a few turns and every, you know, it's, you can't really get into a good rhythm as you're getting out. So power was a little bit choppy, but it was still right about where I wanted it to be, you know, overall average. Then I got to the interstate and I was still about, 3 minutes down from the report that I saw. So I put a good hour at above 70.3 pace to catch up to the group. And, you know, I started working with Matt Bottrell, who you've had on a couple times, a local guy for you there.
Yeah, yeah.
He's great. And, you know, we kind of talked through all the scenarios, and I was pretty comfortable with the training that I've been doing, that I would be able to bridge up and then at higher and then just handle that and figure out a way to find a few times to back off the power and let my heart rate come back down. But it was such a cool morning that my heart rate never really got up as we were going. The weather was perfect. So, I caught up to the pack. And, you know, normally the smart thing to do would just kind of back off a little bit, bring things down. But I got up to the pack and my first thought was, well, I have no idea who's gone off the front. There's some, you know, definitely some strong guys in that group. And I did not want to just settle and think that I was with a group and then realize that I had more work to do deeper into the race. I'd rather try to do the work early when I'm feeling good. And so then I went to the front of that group as soon as I caught them, just to take inventory of everybody as we were going. So I was like ticking off, okay, yep, okay, we're all here. You know, obviously we knew Andrew was off the front and our Andrew Starkwitz was off the front. And so from then on, it was just trying to minimize the damage that he was going to do. I don't think I've ever had an illusion that I can outride Andrew on a ride, but, you know, just trying to keep it as close as possible and you know, just trying to make sure we can do things the way we need to on the run. But for the rest of the bike, I tried four or five times to get off the front and just wasn't able to. Talking to Matt afterwards, I don't know that I structured the efforts the best way or at the best time. And so, you know, again, another learning experience, but I spent a lot of time on the front of the group just trying to minimize the damage. I don't think a lot of people were respecting what Andrew was capable of. He'd beaten me at Galveston by like 13 seconds a few weeks earlier, and you know, I didn't want a recap, or you know, I didn't want that to happen again. So I was trying to keep it as close as I could, and you know, any time I would really back off, everybody behind me would kind of really back off. They were keen to just let me tow things around for the most part. There was a couple times where other people came up and either tried to, like later in the ride, Matt Russell came up and really tried to get away. But, you know, it was a big group. And from what I saw, it was staying fairly legal. At least the top, you know, front four or five guys were. I couldn't really see too much beyond, you know, farther back when I would take a quick peek. But, yeah, there was enough guys that would rotate around to keep anybody who would attack at bay. So.
Yeah.
Made for a really fast run, though, because by the time we got into town, you know, all these hard, you know, really solid runners were getting off the bike at the exact same time. So
you knew it was going to be on at that point. There was a pure run race coming, wasn't there?
Yeah, exactly. We got into transition, and I had a little bit slower transition than everybody else did. They all come from an ITU background, I guess. And I threw on some Compress Sport calf sleeves as well, which cost me a couple seconds in transition. So I made my way through, and I was just thinking, like, I think I was maybe eighth or something out of transition and made my way up to third over the course of the first half mile. And that's when Ivan kind of latched on to me, and I figured, oh, okay, I'll just keep on running, you know, running hard, and eventually he'll just back off and I'll get some breathing room. Julie told me, I guess I don't know what this is in kilometers, but she said, you know, the plan is to go out at like a 550 to 555 pace per mile, and I was running 540s, which again I felt fairly comfortable doing for a little bit with the training that we had done. I didn't ever plan on running the first 16 miles at that pace, but sometimes you just have to throw the plan at the wall and race, and you know that's what this turned out to be. And you know, it could have gone poorly, but you know, you got to take risks to get the reward that you want.
So I'm just trying to do the quick math here. I know roughly 6 minute miles gets you in about 2:36 on the marathon. So if you're running
6 minute miles, I think is 2:37,
isn't it? Yeah. Okay.
With that extra 0.2. So yeah, the plan was to run at 2:37. I thought that's what I would need to do to have a shot. I really thought that Andrew could go 2:50. with the day that, and that's exactly what he, or sorry, 7:50, which is exactly what he did. He ran a 3 flat after biking sub 4. So, you know, I didn't know we would have that many guys going faster than 7:50, but I figured it would take about that to win. And so that was kind of the pre-race plan that we had. I've run a, you know, low 240s a number of times, never been under the 240 mark, but I was, you know, I was really happy with the training that I had coming into the race, and you know, felt like this was a good time to really push and see how fast I could go. And I knew that it was going to take the competition like we had there. You know, I didn't ever plan on anything in the 234 range. That shocked me for sure. But I kind of thought that with a bunch of fast guys getting off at the same time, it was going to make for a fast run.
Yeah. Do you think it was a situation where, I mean, obviously I've only seen some photos of this, but there's you and Ivan Tutkin sort of sitting right on your shoulder, like a proper running race. And you're clipping along at 5:40 mile. Were you running consistently 5:40s, or were you running like a running race? Were you surging and trying to break each other, and or did you just kind of, were you just running really fast for the first 16 miles?
You know, I really thought that if I just kept the pressure on, he would eventually just say, okay, this is dumb, let's just fall back. And
yeah,
he just
think,
never
huh?
did. So I didn't really put any surges in at the beginning. And by the, you know, middle, I didn't really want to at that point, because, you know, I didn't want to risk going a little bit too hard in one of those surges and then myself, you know, put myself in a bad position. I was still feeling good at that point. I was still I was holding form. I was keeping an efficient stride. So I really didn't, you know, I tried to put in a few, like 5 second, you know, just to put a little bit more pressure on. But nothing crazy, no hard surges like you'd see in a 10K or something like that, where people are really battling each other. At the start of the third lap, there was a little out and back, and Julie was yelling at me to start to think of a plan. And the first thought was like, coach, my plan is just to try to hold on.
Well, did you go through the halfway point in the marathon? Do you know?
We were a 1:16 flat.
Wow.
Yeah,
which would win a lot of 70.3s. That'd be a winning run split.
I mean, if I would have ran that fast at Chattanooga, I would have won the race. So wow. It was just kind of one of those days where that's what it took. And thankfully I had enough in the tank. And yeah, the last lap. So Texas is a 3-loop run course, and the last lap, you know, things started to get a little bit ugly. The heat came out a little bit, and obviously, you know, just the wear and tear from the day started to creep up on you, and you start having to fight off some mental gremlins, I always call them, where, you know, I had done a lot of work on the front of the bike and ran in front of Ivan the entire way. So you're like, oh, have I done too much? Did I, you know, give him too much of a free ride? You know, but was thankfully able to fight them off and got to the last mile. And there was a little downhill. I mean, we're talking like 20 yards that was slightly downhill. But that was the biggest probably downhill of the entire race. It was a pretty flat course. But got there, and that's kind of where I was going to try to go earlier. I had mile 24, but I was fighting off some cramps and stuff like that. I couldn't really open up the stride on the little bit of the uphill. That was my first choice to try to go there. And thankfully, I was able to get some salt and some fluids in me, and it relaxed a little bit. So as soon as I got to the downhill, I was able to open up the stride a little bit. I went like 100 yards as fast as I could go, which was probably about 2 to 3 seconds per mile faster than I was actually going at the time, and was able to get a little bit of a gap on him, and then got to the turnaround, and I saw I had 2 seconds on it and on him, at, or 2 or 3 seconds on him at the last little turnaround. And so with about a kilometer to go, I tried to put in another little surge and then finally broke the elastic there. And that's, yeah, and then I was able to hold on to and not ruin it in the last K. So.
Wow. Did you guys talk after you crossed the finish line? Really?
Not a word. Yeah, at all. Which was odd. I guess it never really occurred to me to, you know, I've ran with other people for short bits of time and, you know, usually, you know, say something to them, but we didn't say a single word until the finish line.
Wow.
Which, yeah, it was crazy. Definitely. Yeah.
I mean, it must be hard for him. He's run a 2:35 marathon and finished second. That's pretty unprecedented, isn't it?
Yeah.
What did he say at the finish line to you?
We were both hurting pretty bad.
I bet.
I think I said something like, "What a battle," and he just said, "Wow," and I think that was about it. Someone sent me the interview like immediately after we crossed the finish line. You know, Mike Riley always does the interview with the winners, and I was just a hot mess, like trying to force it. It was awful, and you know, his wasn't much better. I mean, we were just both smashed and not really thinking that clearly, but no, it was good, and yeah, definitely a fun battle to be a part of, and a really fun battle to be over with, because
I am sure
it was intense.
Yeah. Hey, listen, tell me, what's it like getting to ride your TT bike on, you called it an interstate. In England, we'd call that the motorway. But I mean, they closed the motorway down for the morning of the race. And I've just come back in from a couple of hours on my TT bike now through the potholes. And, you know, my neck feels like I've done a couple of rounds of boxing. And I was picturing this interview later, and I wanted to ask you, is it just like the best thing in the world to get to ride your bike along the interstate in terms of smooth tarmac and...
It is for the first 3 hours. You know, most courses, you have these turns and ways that you can like get out, stretch your back a little bit or punch up a hill that you can just loosen up a little bit, move around, where when you've got a group like that and you're on the front and you're trying to keep the pressure down, there's not really many opportunities where you can get out of aero and stretch a little bit without getting a huge drag penalty by doing that. And so it's so fast and it's great for, in the last hour, you're like, man, I wish there was a hill, or I wish I could turn or something, you know. So, you know, that's the only downfall, but that's just, you know, being nitpicky. It's pretty incredible to be able to do that. The downside is it makes it really hard, since they're doing it for two laps. It makes it really hard on that second lap with, you know, the age group packs that are forming, and they, you know, for safety reasons, they had to pull all motos off the course. And so, you know, there came some issues that with the race that because of that. But, you know, for the male pros, at least, it was made for a really fast and, for the most part, pretty clear day.
Yeah. Did you guys end up riding through any of the age groupers, or was the timing enough that you didn't catch anybody at the back end?
No, we definitely had to pass some of the big packs.
Oh, okay.
Which it makes it near impossible to get aid at the aid stations.
Yeah, sure.
On that second lap, and you know, yeah. So, you know, there's always downfalls. It's not as bad as Arizona, which is a three loop course where, you know, you can't. I mean, you better have all the nutrition you need by the middle of the second lap, because after that, you're just, there's way too many people, and you're going 30 miles an hour, and they're going 20 miles an hour, and just makes, and you don't know who's stopped and going to just start off on the side at the aid station. So, I usually try to make sure I'm full at that race, or at any multiple loop race, I try to make sure I'm full before, I was able to get a bottle of water at mile 90 or 95 or yeah, that. So, but other than that, that was the only time on the second loop that I tried even.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I never considered that would be, of course, that's going to be a massive issue for you guys getting aid even. And I guess you've got to be thankful it wasn't a super hot day on the bike at that time in the morning, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and it can be in Texas. Like, I mean, the last two years, the weather, I mean, everybody's going to think that this is just this amazing course and it's super fast. You know, if we had a race on Sunday, winds, you know, high winds came in, it probably would have been about 30 minutes slower.
Yeah.
Because there, you know, the interstate is super fast, but there is nothing to block it from the wind. So on a, you know, if it gets, if there's any wind at all, it's going to punish you. So, you know, one of these days it's not going to be perfect weather when the race comes there, and people are going to, the first timers there are going to be, what is this? I thought this was a fast horse.
Listen, I wanted to ask you, how did you get started in triathlon? What was your first experience of sort of endurance athletics, and what led you into triathlon in the first place? Because we sometimes forget that super pros going super fast, and now, congratulations, world record holders have got to start somewhere, right? So how was that story for you?
Funny story, actually. Well, yes. So I wrestled up to college. I did run a little bit. But never, I always was trying to run to lose weight for wrestling or stay in shape for wrestling. And I never really put anything into track or cross country, you know, or put what I did into wrestling. And so I was at a wrestling camp when I was 16. And one of my mentors at that camp challenged me to make a list of 50 goals for the next 10 years. And one of those goals that I put on there for some reason was to do an Ironman triathlon. No idea why.
Wow.
I didn't know anybody that did a triathlon. I didn't have a road bike. You know, I just put it on the list. I think I was probably running out of things to do, because it was one of the last ones that I put down. So I was just trying to come up with things to fill up the 50. But I took that list pretty seriously and kept it with me for 10 years and would look at it on my birthday every year. It was just kind of developed into a ritual. And on my 25th birthday, I looked at him like, well, I better sign up for a triathlon here. So I was working on my master's at the time, had no money, but signed up for Ironman Coeur d'Alene and bought a cheap bike off of eBay. And decided to try to learn how to swim again. So I did Coeur d'Alene and planned on doing like a one and done, just never doing another one again, but ended up qualifying for Kona in my first shot. And Evidently ignorance is bliss. It worked well and things went well that day. I think I ran a 3:03. That was my first real marathon as well. So
I was expecting you to say, I ran track and cross country in college. I was a runner before I came, and I'd also swum as a kid and you were a wrestler. I mean, that's a real left field answer. I wasn't expecting that at all, Matt.
I never planned on this being my life. Like, I have a doctorate. I was teaching at the university here full time, and I earned my pro card in 2013, but never really planned on taking it. The reason I took my pro card, I thought I could win my age group at Kona, and I went to Kona in 2013, and I ended up with 3 flat tires. So I was standing on the side of the road for over 20 minutes waiting for help on that third tire, and ended up finishing 8th or 9th or something in the age group. I was so upset about it that, like, well, if I take my pro card, I can go race Arizona in a couple of weeks and really see where my fitness is. And so that's why I became a pro. I think I was 18th in my first pro race ever, and like, I wasn't last. that's the reason that I took the pro card. And at that time I was on a 10-year track. You guys don't have 10-year in the UK, I don't think, in the universities, but basically it's a job for life. And at the university, unless you really screw up, I was on the 10-year track and everything was going well. And I won Ironman Texas for the first time in 2015. I had to drive. I gave my speech at the awards the next morning, had to drive 17 and a half hours back to the university. Went straight to the university, showered at the school, taught 8, 9, 10, and 11 a.m. classes. And then, the next day, my wife and I kind of had a long conversation about, I think I can do something special in this sport. I really think that I have a chance at chasing a world championship, but I can't do this burning the candle at both ends. And she was on board 100%. So I was 6 months away from essentially a job for life at the university, and decided to chase a dream instead.
Good man. You followed the dream.
All
these threads come together, you know, the little thought I should do Ironman and the managing to win Ironman Texas. And this is just great. Sometimes destiny just gets in the way, doesn't it, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, you flick something at the top of a mountain, and by the time it gets to the bottom, it's just this huge snowball. And that's kind of the way that it's been for me. You know, when I started this, my wife and I thought we were going to have, you know, she works at the university as well. So that's what we thought we were going to do. And, you know, I was supposed to have like summers off and just, you know, just to research and teach and do that life. And then, you know, this opportunity presented itself, and you know, I kind of felt like it was my responsibility to grab onto it and really find out. You know, I don't want to look back when I'm 50 or 60 and say, hey, what if? Now I'll know. So got a few more years of good racing in front of me, I hope, and hopefully we can go after a couple more titles.
Good man. Bigger ones. So listen, what's next then? What have you got planned for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I'm going to go to Coeur d'Alene and do the 70.3 there. I had a good race there last year, so I'm going to return there. That's the end of June. So, well, before that, I'm going to go out to Boulder and train with Julie and her crew out there a little bit, watch Ironman Boulder. My sister's doing that one. So I'll get to spectate and get some good training out there. And then after Coeur d'Alene, I'm shutting it down for 2 weeks. I'm going to go, my wife is racing Challenge Rope. Going to go to Germany and watch her race. The reason she's racing there is because that was kind of our backup plan. If Texas wouldn't have gone well, I would have had to race Frankfurt the next week. So thankfully I get to go and enjoy some time in Germany rather than have to prepare to race while she's racing. So get to watch that. And then I'm going to come to the UK and train with Matt for a little bit afterwards. That'll be my start of the build into Kona. I'll maybe do a couple 70.3s leading into Kona, but get some good training in after that and build up for hopefully a well-executed day in Kona this year.
Good. And let's talk a little bit about coaching. You've mentioned both Julie Dibbins and Matt Botterill, who you've been working with. What importance do you place on the relationship you've got with your coaches, Matt?
Yeah, they've been great. you know, when I my background is in exercise science. I was teaching, I was in charge of the exercise science program at the university here. And so, you know, a lot of people ask, well, why don't you just coach yourself? And, you know, it's something that before I went to Julie, I toyed around with a little bit. But at the end of the day, I realized that I just have so much to learn about racing. And there's so much that I can continue to learn about aerodynamics and about just how, you know, so Julie's been great with that. Like she's been there, done that on the triathlon scene, you know, world champion herself. She's really good with helping me in the swim as well. And so she's definitely helped me learn how to race like a pro, because it's very different than racing like an age grouper. We can't unfortunately just sit at, you know, there's not many races where we can just sit at our target all day long and just let it, you know, there's a lot of tactics and things like that. And so that's really important to me. And then, you know, Matt's been great at just helping me. I do a lot of my bike training indoors. And so Matt's been able to help me bring that power indoors that I produce indoors, outdoors. And I've struggled with that for the last 5 years. Like my bike has been on a new level this year. And, you know, the sessions that we're doing are really good, but you know, the power that I'm putting out in the sessions is not hugely different than what I was doing in the past, but the power that I'm putting out in races is. So Matt's just really helped me figure a lot of that stuff out and get me in a pretty darn narrow position as well. And I've used his expertise a lot. I'm really excited to go and I've never met him face to face. So I'm excited to go and do that. It's also great to have that like team environment. Julie's got a great crew. Matt's got a great crew that he works with on the bike as well. And so, you know, I'm in Iowa here. I train alone 99% of the time. So it's fun to go out to swim with Julie's crew in Boulder or ride some hills and just have it be a social thing. You know, all age groupers love the social side of it. Well, you know, we do too. It's just not always possible for me. So that's been a fun part of it as well.
Nice. And in terms of equipment and sponsors and people who've helped you out, I really like to give people the chance to give a shout out to people who've helped you along the way. So we noticed you're looking pretty aerodynamic and fast on that new Quintana Roo bike of yours. So let's talk about that a little bit, huh?
Yeah, Matt's really got me dialed in. Looking forward to finding a few more free watts there. Yeah, it's been good. I've switched to the disc brake this year, which, you know, everybody seems to, you know, have different opinions on the disc brake. But, you know, obviously the braking is a big piece of it. But you ride a disc brake with a through axle, like the QR has a through axle now, like it is so different in the power transfer. Like it is so much stiffer than it is with a standard skewer. Like you notice that right away. So that's been great. I changed saddles this year. I was on one of the old Adamos, which is not made anymore. Now it's the ISM PN 3.0, which has really helped alleviate some of the back issues that I have from an older wrestling injury. Still creeps in there every now and then, but I'm going to work with some people there to help get rid of that when I'm in the UK as well. You know, SRAM's at Cork, obviously all the best stuff on the market there. So yeah, I'm really, really happy with where I'm at with CDA. I've been able to go to the Velodrome and test it a couple times, and here in LA, and hoping to get into the wind tunnel as soon as I can. For some reason, scheduling time in a wind tunnel is difficult, but we're going to get in there someday. But yeah, so equipment's been good.
We'll have to get you in when you come to the UK. They've just opened a new one there, Matt, so I'll have to get you in there.
Yeah, that was the plan. I think they're commissioning it the week after I get there with the new Boardman one.
That's right.
So I've been working with Barney there. We're going to meet up anyways, but I don't think they're going to be quite set up when I'm there.
Oh, what a shame.
So, yeah. But we'll get back there again.
All right, listen, final question then. If you had your perfect race at Kona,
yep,
what do you think you could do in terms of both performance and time? I want to really put you on the spot. Sorry, man, I said I wouldn't do this, but here I am, I've done it.
You know, I think I've got what it takes to win on the Big Island. I don't know that that'll happen this year. I haven't executed a good day there as a pro. So that's my goal this year. I'm not going to go out and try to win it. There'll be a time when I go out there with the intent to win that race. But for now, I'm just planning on going out to execute a really good day. You know, if I put together the day that I did at Texas, there's really, you know, no way that I won't be near the pointy end come the end of the day. You know, that race, yeah, everything just kind of clicked minus the swim start. So, you know, if I can clean up that little part right there, you know, that was the type of performance that'll take to give me a shot to run for a win in the last 10K. I'm not going to do anything bold and say I'm going to, or, you know, I would have won Kona with that, you know, or anything like that, but it would have put me in the mix to fight for it at the end. And that's all I can ask for. I really believe that if I'm in the mix in the last 10K, that, you know, someone's going to have to work pretty darn hard to take that away. So there's definitely guys that are willing to do that, though. So it'll be fun. Can't wait to get there and find out. I think Matt's and Julie are the team that I need. And, you know, the sponsors that I have, you know, Normatec is at every race. Quintana Roo's at every race. You know, they take care of me while I'm there, especially in Kona, like anything that I need, you know. So it just makes for a much, you know, less stressful day to be able to go out and put things together. So yeah, sorry, that was a long answer without a correct time.
No, that's good. I guess what I'm more interested in is when you visualize the race, rather than the time, let's forget that. When you visualize the race, who do you see on your shoulder coming over into the last 2 miles of the run? Who do you see racing in the last part of the marathon?
You know, it's such a tough question because, you know, I've ran that Texas race in my head so many times before the race. You know, I've done that course on the run, especially. Like, I did all my training in the winter is on the treadmill. A lot of my training is on the treadmill. And so, you know, I do a lot of visualization. I never picked Ivan to be running with. And, you know, it just goes to show that at big races, you know, I think 2 years ago, Patrick really surprised everybody. And last year, I don't think he surprised quite as many people. You know, he's definitely one that if I'm hit, the way he executed his race last year is the way I have to execute to win. So that gave, you know, that the way that race played out, it shows that my game plan can win. But, you know, with so many guys coming up, you know, Javier is coming up, you know, Brownlee's are, you just never know what's going to shake out. You know, Frodeno is definitely going to have a good year this year. Lionel is going to, you know, be off the front on the bike probably at some point. So there's so many tough guys that you're going to have to chase down in order to be anywhere near the top end. So, yeah, definitely a lot of good athletes out there that keep me honest in my workouts back here.
That's great. Hey, well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show, man. It's been great talking to you, and congratulations again. We've had loads of comments into us over email and in Facebook and stuff about that race and what an amazing performance it was. So it's great to get to talk to you and say well done. And I hope we can get you back on the show in future. And who knows, man, maybe you'll even be Kona champion this year. But you've got to promise us an interview when you finally do win, huh?
Yeah, definitely for sure. No promises on the win this year, but we're gonna go and have a good day and be somewhere farther or closer to the front than we were the last year. So,
all right, great stuff, man.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, buddy. We'll speak to you again soon. Bye now. There we go, Hells, and I've got an interview lined up with his bike coach, Matt Botterill, UK-based Matt Botterill, obviously. That's going to be coming out in a few weeks' time as well. We've got that lined up for later this week. So more tips from Matt. Hopefully I'm going to try and squeeze him dry of all the tips we can get out of him for our listeners to find out how they can make their... Matt's doing something right with all these people who are going fast on the bike, that's for sure. He's got some secrets.
Yeah, Tim Don, Rachel Joyce, Lucy Charles...
Reese,
Will Clark.
Will Clark, yeah, pretty much. There's tons of people these days, so we're going to find out. Pick his brain this Friday. Coming up soon to an interview near you. And on that note, let's talk about your other interview that you managed to get with Nikki Bartlett, shall we?
Yes, so I caught up with Nikki after she raced at Ironman Lanzarote, where she finished in third pro position. So great result. And then she obviously backed it up at Staffordshire this past weekend, finishing second and absolutely smashing it on the bike. We've been following Nikki from the very, very beginning, so we always love having her on and hearing her updates and seeing her improve year on year. So here we go. Here is... a slightly out of date, but all as ever, Rob, always enjoyable interview with Nikki Bartlett. Nikki Bartlett, welcome back to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon podcast. How are you? How are you recovering?
Yeah, I'm actually doing all right. I've got absolutely no niggles or anything post race. And I think because I felt so horrendous the day after the race. I mean, honestly, like, I don't even know how to describe it. It felt like if lactic acid could literally be in your mouth and you feel like you want to vom all day. That's how I felt. And I was just, I felt like really hungover, but hadn't had any alcohol the night before, couldn't stomach it. I felt horrendous. I mean, we tried to go for an hour walk at a leisurely pace. I couldn't even hack it. I was like, no, I need to go back to bed. We had to go for a very early lunch, even though we just had breakfast, just to an excuse to sit down. So I'm comparing my progress from the day after the race, and actually I feel like I've done a nice easy spin on the bike today and on the watt bike, and it felt really comfortable. I feel fine in the water. I haven't done any running yet, but I don't know if this is madness, but I'm on Staffordshire 70.3 next weekend, so we're not doing too much anyway at the moment.
Wow, so this is Wednesday after your third pro place finish at Ironman Lanzarote. And so what, in literally 10 days' time, you're doing a 70.3?
Yeah, it's that. I love that, like, a lot of people are like, are you mad? And, I might be mad, but I love the course. I love racing in the UK. And I love racing, and I'm fit, I'm healthy, so why not? I'm just going to go out and I'll give everything I've got on the race day and see what comes of it. I've made a huge improvement in recovery in the last 4 days since the race, so yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I've done every edition of staff, so yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I've progressed every year, so we'll see where this one goes.
I like this attitude. This is a great attitude, and you won't be the first person to do a 70.3 just a fortnight after an Ironman. And we've heard people before and about the recovery between or doing the dirty double with the Ironman, you know, 2 weeks apart. So I think it's very brave, but it will be, yeah, it'll be ace that you can actually go and do Staffordshire, because I know that it's a very fond course of yours, isn't it?
Yeah, I do enjoy it. I just love racing in the UK, and you know, the ease of just putting the bike in the back of the car, and it's 90 minutes from my parents' house, so it's just like a no-brainer for me to go. And yeah, you've got loads of friends racing as well, and obviously it's predominantly a British field, so yeah, it's great fun. It's a nice weekend away with the family. The family and the extended family come, so it's just a really nice day out.
Awesome. So let's go back to a week ago, and you're out in Lanzarote. What was going through your mind ahead of Ironman Lanzarote? Because of course you had hoped to race at Ironman South Africa, but then you had your bike crash.
Yeah, a bike crash. My last ride before flying out to South Africa. So obviously that was not in the plan. And to be honest, I felt like 2017 was a really rocky year for me. I mean, anyone who's involved or closely involved will understand that nothing really went to plan, even though some of my results might not show that. Nothing really went to plan. Then when that happened, I was like, oh no, the dark cloud is still over my head, kind of thing. I was in quite a bad place actually for straight after the crash, like mentally and physically. So I knew I just needed a new goal pretty quick, but then I didn't know how long different parts of my body from the crash would take to recover. So really,
where was the biggest impact sort of physically on your body?
At first, my knee was just so swollen, I couldn't bend it. So the whole one side of my body had locked up really, well, one side of my leg. And then I broke a few things in my hand, but also the worst part of that was the bone bruising, and it still caused me a lot of issues. Because it's in the knuckles, so I really struggle to bend those knuckles. Hang on. Sorry, I'm just having a cough fit. So I struggle to bend those knuckles. And then as soon as I exercise, almost all of those three fingers join up and they go really fat. So then it makes it really hard to bend the hand or the fingers, which is on my right hand, so it makes day-to-day things quite difficult. And obviously, swim training has been difficult. It was a difficult 7 weeks up to Lanzarote.
And were you in a good place a week ago, though? Once you were actually on Lanzarote, I guess in that space of time, you had done what you could do to get yourself on the start line.
Yeah, I knew I wanted to do one, you know, around 6 weeks after the crash. It really only left Texas, which was just too expensive for us to get to. And I didn't, to be honest, I'm glad I didn't do it now, after all. But the course didn't really, I like hilly courses, so the course didn't suit me. Obviously, Texas isn't hilly. So really, I only left Lanzarote, and I love that kind of race. And I thought, well, why not? The only thing that put me off is the swim start. And obviously, with my hand the way it was, and I knew I would get battered in the swim, but oh my God, like, I'll talk about it later when we come to it, but it was just a whole new level of what I thought would happen. Lanzarote was really our only choice, but also when I looked into it, I was like, actually, this course would really suit me. And the practicality of Lanzarote is just brilliant. It's really easy logistically, which for an Ironman, you really want to kind of find those races, because for anyone who's done an Ironman, it's just a faff, and there's so many things going on that actually you need to really simplify things. So having an easy race location was perfect, and I'm so glad I chose Lanzarote to do that race.
And so how did you find it as a race? So start off in the swim, it just sounds like the fastest spinning washing machine probably that exists in...
Well, I actually, when I entered, I didn't actually know that that's how the swim went until someone said, oh, you realise what the swim's like there? And I was like, no. So for anyone who doesn't know, or does know but doesn't know how horrendous it is, what happens is the pros start in the water but stood up. And then the 2000 age groupers start on the beach 10, 20 meters back, but they're running down from the beach. And there's one start gun. So the start gun goes off. But by the time, because it's quite shallow for a while, so by the time everyone hits proper swimming in the water, you are just all together. So, and if you've got, say, I don't know, 300 to 500 athletes of those age group men are going to be quicker swimmers, they are on top of you straight away. And it is, without a doubt, one of the most horrendous experiences I've ever had. And it's for the whole of the swim. It doesn't spread out just because there's so many people in the water. I think I lost my goggles twice. My hat came off. My timemanship came off. I felt honestly battered by the time I'd come out. Like, I think the first few minutes I hardly took any swim strokes because I'd take a stroke and then somebody would be on top of me. I'd be dunked. They'd swim over the top of you. And then, yeah, that would be like a continuous thing for the first, I don't know, like 600 meters.
That sounds scary.
It's horrendous. And then obviously because my hand isn't recovered and I could feel it getting really sore. And, you know, by the time you've got your head kicked, battered and punched a few times, you know, your head's a bit sore. And it's like, I'm so glad you have little Aussie exits. So you can come out and be like, right, okay, refresh. But actually it's so busy again on the second lap that it didn't really make a difference to come out. So I was glad when the swim was over, but it's a shame because I swam the course on my own, you know, just really easy on the exact course, coming out on the beach just like you would in the race, and I swam it a couple of minutes quicker than I did on race day on my own in choppy conditions at easy pace. So it's a bit frustrating because I felt like, you know, no matter how much swim training you've done, it was just not a very pleasant experience. But because I'd entered, you can't complain about something you knew about. You can't complain about something you entered yourself for. So I'm just making it aware to people who would think to do the race. But on the flip side, that is literally the only downside of the race. I know, obviously, it's a chunk of the race. But apart from that, I've not got any faults about the race. It's absolutely fantastic. It was probably one of the best races I've done as an all-round package of logistics, the course, just, you know, so you can see why it's an iconic race. You can see why it's been voted the world's toughest Ironman. It's fantastic. So that's the swim. So that aside, when you get out on the bike, it is brilliant. Like, you know, there's something quite special about the lava fields, and then you go through so many different types of views through the course. You've obviously got the wind, the sun. I mean, the wind's pretty relentless, it's unpredictable.
And was it windy? What were the conditions like?
Like, it was windy, but it wasn't like, oh my God, I need to concentrate, stay on the bike kind of wind. I mean, there was gusts where you were like, oh, yeah, there it is again. So if you're not confident, I wouldn't go with deep section wheels. Because I didn't find it too bad, but I'm quite used to, like, I've been to Lanzarote, so I know what it's like. Mm-hmm. I think if you haven't been there before, you might be quite shocked, but it wasn't crazy winds at all. Well, I didn't notice in particular, but other people might have.
How did you find the actual bike leg? Because obviously at that point you...
Yeah, so there's 8,000 feet of climbing, and, you know, the bike course has been renowned for a hard, obviously a brutal course, but literally when you practiced it or looked it up, when you look on the course profile, you go up and then you come down, and because you come down, some parts are technical, some parts are really crosswindy. You've got, you know, you can't switch off on the downhills. Obviously got switchbacks from some of the climbs. So yeah, you're going up or down, and it's 8,000 feet of climbing, and I love it. I prefer that to flat courses. But yeah, there's not much where you can just be like, oh, I'm on a straight road.
And did you see the other pro women around you?
Yeah, so I came out of the water ninth. So after an absolutely horrendous swim and a swim where I'm like, wow, I haven't shown where any of my improvements come through from the winter. So it's a bit frustrating. But I went past, I was in fourth within the first hour of the bike. And then into third by before halfway. So yeah, and I was riding pretty conservatively, and it felt pretty easy. And it's like the first race I can say I've got my nutrition right, which takes a while in Ironman racing.
So what did you do differently this time compared to other
gels? Because I didn't know. I thought, oh, it's just a normal thing, you know, you're feeling sick on gels or whatever. And because usually I used to put gels in water bottles, but I don't do that anymore. I just put energy powder in, and I think I only had two gels in the race, and then everything else was Cliff Blocks. And I much preferred this, and I also had one Cliff Bar, but everything else was Cliff Blocks.
So really cutting back on the gels.
Yeah, I didn't have any stomach issues in terms of nutrition, and I didn't feel sick. Like, sometimes I can literally physically cough up sticky water, like nothing water in a race. So it's the first time I was like, okay, brilliant, that's worked. And it's something I've practiced a lot in training, because it's really difficult to get enough calories in and grams of carbs per hour. So you've got to really calculate it and make sure you're having enough. But Cliff Blocks punch quite a lot of that in, so that's good. And my Fusion race suit, I've got pockets on the back. So in T1, in my T1 bag, I put a load of nutrition in there as well.
Yep.
So I didn't have to rely on the course at all. All I needed to rely on the course was energy drinks and water. But not really. I didn't need the calories of energy drinks. I just needed some kind of any kind of fluid, really, they were given out. So yeah, my Fusion suit allowed me to just not have to rely on any aid stations, because actually you get to a race, I didn't even know which the nutrition brand was for this race, and I never used any of those nutrition brands. I didn't want to rely on that, and I tried them at the expo and I was like, I don't actually know if my stomach would be okay on that. So
tried and tested. And then Nikki, PB on the marathon for you.
Yes, PB on the marathon, which I was really pleased about, and there's loads more to come on that. I mean, there was quite a bit of curb sitting, I'm not gonna lie. And
in what way?
Yeah, it was just a bit of an emotional day. There was stomach cramps in not nutritional ways. So yeah, there was a lot of emotion in that sense, and it's usually that point in my cycle where I usually have to have a day off from training. So it was really bad timing. But nothing I could have done about it, and just had to kind of mentally get through it. And luckily the crowds on the run are absolutely amazing, like epic, and the aid stations were brilliant in that they had ice, sponges, everything you could ask for, and there was plenty of it. So even when the course got packed, they weren't running out, and it was really good. So basically the run course is three loops. One big loop which goes past the airport, and I knew it went past the airport quite some way, but literally you go around every corner like, where is that turn point? You're like, oh my god, corner, oh no, it's not there, next corner, oh my god, where's the next corner? And it's actually quite headwind going out, so you've gone through town where there's loads of support, and then you're all of a sudden in a really lonely patch.
Oh no.
I know. So it's about 5-6k into the run, into lonely patch, into a bit of a headwind where you're wishing each corner to be the turn point. Anyway, so that finally comes, and then you know you're running back towards town, and then in town you do two town loops, which actually, as I'm saying, it sounds small, but obviously consider this is actually a marathon, so still those town loops are like, I think the 10-11k or something.
And the people in town getting more and more drunk.
Oh, it's brilliant, because like there's people there, like I met people there who are literally on their holiday and they have no idea what the hell we're doing. They're just like, see all these athletes out. And some of them just think you're doing a marathon, which I'm not saying just, because a marathon itself is just ridiculous. But they just think you're doing a marathon. And obviously, they're just there, they're drunk, and they're just like in awe of what you're doing. So they're cheering. And then there's loads of support anyway, and it's really busy. And it's kind of like an Ironman Wales kind of supported run. And yeah, there's just loads of people and it's brilliant. And the volunteers at the aid stations are great, and they do a special needs, which now this is my fourth completed Ironman, I would recommend anyone to take advantage of special needs on the run, because we went past that three times, so I knew, well, I had a litre and a half worth of fluid that I knew was coming into my body, because actually you get a paper cup and you run for a bit and then all of a sudden it's nearly all gone because it's splashed out, and then by the time it hits your mouth, it's... Well, I actually walk or go like really slow through the aid station to make sure I get it down. But even so, you're not getting much in, are you? And especially because it's like round to be a hot race.
Nikki, at what point did Simone come past you on the run?
Soon on the run, because actually I came out and I didn't know if I was going to start the run. And to be honest, I only started the run really because people saw me go into the toilet when I was coming out of T2. My transition times are awful. I was coming out of T2 and I was like, no, I'm going to have to go and sit in the toilet for a bit. So I went to the toilet. Anyway, it's a bit of an emotional toilet experience. And then I was like, oh my God, like, I don't know where to start the run. And then all of a sudden, all I heard was, come on! Because obviously the third woman lady biker was waiting outside for me. And then the crowds were there, like, oh my God, like, I'm going to have to get out of the toilet. Anyway, it's too hot in here. And so I was like, oh, okay, I'll start. And then I'll go and find Bex. Anyway, and then I remember Bex saying I'll be at the airport, which was 6K away. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to get to 6K. So then I was like, oh God. And then I saw Bex's parents and I had a little cry on them. And then she was gone past by then. But I was shuffling, like, I was going really slow at that point.
And how bad were the stomach cramps?
Yeah, horrendous. Like, yeah, not nice, but I dealt with it and I'm proud. It was probably one of my proudest race finishes and moments. But yeah, no, really proud. And a lot of people would have been there themselves. And it's, you have to break the race down into ridiculously tiny sections. And I was running, and that's why I was like really... I didn't even, when someone said you ran 316, I was like, no way, because I was being 316, because like I felt like I stopped so much. So when I was running really well. It was just, yeah, it was a bit stop starty. So I know there's loads more to come, which is exciting. And you know, there was some serious talent on the start line, and to finish. So I was really proud, and it's a brilliant race. I highly recommend people go to do it. It's got to be on everyone's list to do. Like, I'd go back even though I experienced a horrendous hour of the swim. I'd still go back and do it. I'm hoping they'd change it, but I don't know. I don't think they will.
Doing an Ironman, for people that have done it, they know how hard it is. Doing an Ironman, blokes don't have to deal with this. With a period, I'm sorry, but that actually is full-on nails.
Thanks. No, yeah, it's good.
Especially if that's the usual day when you're literally in bed and you have to have a rest day. That's brilliant. That is amazing. You should be so proud of that.
Thanks. It's a bit embarrassing, but yeah. No, it's good. I was proud, and you know, other people would have been affected. So it's one of those things. Like, Bex was reminding me on the run, like, I represent a charity called Abbey Sparkle Foundation, and we are very fortunate to be able to be doing this. And pain was temporary, and whatever pain anyone out there was suffering, cramps, I don't know, anything out there, like, but those memories last forever, and we're very lucky to be able to do what we do. And Bex reminded me of that in the race, and I was like, yeah, do you know what, like, stop frigging complaining and just get on with it and enjoy it, soak up the crowds, you know, just like break the race into chunks, put ice down your tops, like anything to help. So yeah, like, you know, it's amazing to be able to do what we do, and I loved it. And when I crossed the line, there was a lot of emotion, and it was a lot of emotion just because it's you're not getting to the race you were target, like, South Africa was probably my A race of the year. Like, it was my biggest race. I was going to want to target. I was fit, I was healthy, and you know, so close to getting there, and yet so far because I didn't even make it. So it was great, and yeah, I'm really looking forward to the rest of the season.
So Nikki, Staffordshire, which would be better timing, in 10 days time, brilliant. And then will you be doing another Ironman?
Yeah, so then I'm like going to try and target Edinburgh 70.3 as well, which is 3 weeks after Staffs. So that's quite a lot in one chunk. Obviously, I'm at Lanzarote, Staffs, and Edinburgh. But then after Edinburgh, at the end of July, I'm going to do, I think we've definitely decided Ironman Switzerland as of today. We were toying with Ironman Hamburg and Ironman Switzerland, and it was and Bolton came into the equation, but I can't do Bolton, it clashes too much. So I'm going to go and do Ironman Switzerland, and then my biggest focus will be on Ironman Wales.
Nice. Cool. This is fantastic news.
Yeah, and all those races excite me, and I love racing in the UK, and I also want to see Switzerland, and I think the course will suit me well, and yeah, and some family are going to come out as well, and it works out well with timings of getting some training in, and yeah, it all looks good.
Nice one. Nikki, thank you so much. It's bedtime for both. My one last very short question. I've just got in from Spin, and I wanted to know, what song do you put on to get you going if you're on the bike?
Oh my God. Oh, I'm so bad. I'm actually now, because when I crashed, I broke my iPod.
Oh.
I know. I was so upset in times.
Oh no.
I know. So I don't have an iPod, and my phone is quite old, so the battery dies quickly. But podcasts are brilliant. Like, keeps me going.
Are you a podcast on the turbo kind of a person?
Yeah, I think so. Well, it depends what I'm doing, because if it's a set...
Efforts, like, come on, if it's, like, big efforts where you really got to, like, you know...
I usually put the charts on my laptop.
There you go.
That's literally what I do. I just put charts, top 2018 or whatever, put it on my laptop and let that fire through and get a speaker on and get some buzz in. Because I do that. And then usually for my watt bike sessions, I go to the Passion Fit studio and they just whack on the tunes, but they're pretty old school, so you get a mixture in there. I'm really bad with knowing song names and titles and whatever, so Tom just sorts all the playlists out for me. just anything really. Like, I'm pretty good at motivating myself for a session. It's usually the long ones without intervals. I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? What do I watch? So that's when I get all my tacky programs out.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. We're up to date. Nikki, pleasure having you on as always. We will catch up soon.
Thanks, Helen.
Awesome Kudos stuff.
Kudos, isn't it?
Yeah.
Honestly.
So head all the way back if you can find it in the library of iTunes, back that far. The first ever short little, podcast that we ever did. Helen said to me, we should try and get this girl Nikki Bartlett on. I said, yeah, let's do it. Neo Pro. So is it 4 years on now? Are we into the fourth year?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Wow. It'll be 4 years in December, won't it?
It will. Yeah. Crikey. Nice work, Nikki Bartlett. We look forward to hearing more.
Definitely. We will carry on getting interviews with her. Rob, one other thing I wanted to mention is that we will be announcing, you know, we had the competition about the best and the worst advice that you've ever been given to win a personalised signed copy of Chrissy Wellington's book. We will be announcing that over the next week or two.
Great stuff. And that pretty much brings us to the end of today's episode, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. We still need your nominations for the Tribe Triathlete of the Month Award, don't we?
We do. So if you can send those through, you can send them through to helen@oxygenaddict.com. We want to hear from you if you have done something good, if one of your friends has done something good, if you've had a noteworthy race performance. Don't be shy. Tell the world about it. We love hearing about the nominations, and you'll be rewarded with a Tribe t-shirt and a big pack of 18 delicious energy bars, chews, shakes, all kinds of good stuff from our friends over at Tribe Nutrition. So you can check them out at wearetribe.co. And get it sent in. We want to hear from you. And I'll tell you what, one other thing. If you're racing at the Lakesman this weekend, I will be cheering you on from the sidelines in the shadows after I've hopefully completed the Lakesman half. So if you're up there, come and say hi. I'll be standing around with my little microphone and interviewing people afterwards. So we should have a bit of live audio for that next week as well, Hells.
Great. So go and say hello to Rob. Make sure you beat him out of T2. And have a great race, Rob.
Thank you very much. No pressure.
I'll tell you one thing. Honestly, having the kit on, you get those extra little cheers.
Yeah, I'm going to need all the help I can get.
You're going to fly. Can't wait to hear about it.
We'll see. I'm going to shuffle, that's for certain.
Okay, well, shuffling's better. You'll still get around.
I'm going to have the big Helen Murray smile on, that's for sure.
It's the winning formula, Rob. After Diva, by the way, I did do the cheering on thing, and I absolutely embarrassed, I think, Rich and my parents. I was going absolutely potty with like a football thing, one of those things.
Oh, like a rattle?
Yeah, rattle. I was probably annoying anybody that came past me. I was so excited and energetic. And I was like, oh, no, I haven't just finished this race when I thought I was going to die at the finish line. Suddenly I'm like, woohoo, we want to cheer people on. So, yeah, I had a lot of fun. So if I cheered for you, well, there you go. That's just me. Apologies if I put you off.
Well, I can't promise I'm going to be as energetic as that, but we'll see how we go. And so best of luck to everybody racing Lakesman this weekend. I'll see you up there, and best of luck to you if you're racing anywhere else as well this coming weekend. And that's it. That's the end of the show. So thanks very much for listening, everybody. It's been the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. I'm Coach Rob Wilby.
I'm Helen Murray.
Remember, you can get yourself a tube of Precision Hydration worth up to $9.99 or a packet of Precision Hydration using the code OXYGENADDICT and just have to pay the postage. So thanks very much, everybody. We'll speak to you again soon. Have a great week. See ya.